And so, understanding why people do what they do is probably always going to be the biggest part of, behavioral intervention. How can we motivate them or incentivize an individual to change their behavior, right?
Mo, we got a special guest up in here.
Who do we have today?
I don't know, your friend.
Mo, we ain't friends. Is that what you're saying?
I know, right?
So, who do we have here?
Anthony Fletcher, one and only, of course.
Yes.
It's been a minute.
Been a minute. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Good. Y'all still shooting the shit, huh?
Yeah, still shooting the shit.
Always.
Do you want to tell everybody a little bit about who you are, Anthony, or should we call you Fletch?
Yeah. What should we call you, Big Fletch?
Yeah. Everyone calls me Fletch.
Oh, Mo, that Big Fletch.
Big Fletch. Big Fletch works as well. As far as what, like, who am I to you, or just?
Oh, hey, whatever
who is you?
College classmates, I guess.
Yes. Oh, y'all are old dogs from back in the day. Way.
Go Bruins.
Go Bruins, indeed. I guess we're on here to talk about behavior coaching, so we'll talk a little bit about that. So, right now I'm working as a training specialist for a behavioral health provider here in the state of Texas. We work with kids who are mostly on the spectrum. And these are all kids who have some sort of challenging or adverse behavior. I've worked direct care with kids for almost 20 years now. For the last few years, I've been working just as a trainer. So I train our staff in crisis intervention training, safety, provide support, all those sorts of things. But recently I started up a new venture. I'm starting a program called Behavior Bites. It's basically just a behavior coaching program that utilizes content, which is, the curriculum of most value these days. So just using YouTube videos.
Oh, okay.
Podcasting, a lot like what you guys are doing, creating a curriculum that can be used to guide seminars that we'll be doing for parents who and caretakers of kids who have challenging behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So that is
when you say challenging behavior.
Yeah, what's that? I feel attacked.
I got some challenging behavior up in my house, so maybe I'm sure you mean something a little more.
Let me sign up.
I guess it depends on who you ask, right? Mostly we're just talking about things that don't allow for our kids to move into adulthood with behaviors that don't allow them to function like everyone else does, so talking about physical aggression, impulse control, and inability to kind of engage with, what we think of as social norms. So there's a pretty broad spectrum when I use the word behavior, but it really just refers to anything that's sort of aversive to a child's ability to function in regular society. And right now for most of our kids, that's classroom environment, home, so it doesn't allow them to function well at home or in the classroom environment in most cases.
Mm-hmm. And so you're training parents, is that what you're doing, or caretakers, or?
Yeah, so I've worked I've worked with private clients for a number of years as well. So it's been people that I've met either at church or who have been referred to me from people I've worked with in the past, or they've been former students. But I work with parents mostly. A lot of what we do. I should kind of give you this caveat. I work in a field called what's referred to as ABA, and that stands for. I'm having a brain fart here. Basically, what it is a behavioral intervention program, right? We work mostly with kids who are on the spectrum, but it's obviously not limited to just kids who are on the spectrum. Right. ABA is a type of therapy that can be used even with adults. It's got pretty wide range in terms of how it's used. It's basically just behavior analysis that's used to change behaviors, right? I don't work in ABA in terms of my behavioral interventions, but I use a lot of ABA concepts. So basically what I do with parents is talk about what behaviors they're seeing in home. You know, a lot of times these will be parents who are at their wit's end in terms of what their behaviors, the kids' behaviors look like, to the point where they can't go to the grocery store, you know, or they're having to pull their kids out of school because, you know, they're getting called every day to come grab their kid. And obviously, you know, if you're a working parent, can't do that. ABA services definitely has its uses. It's been an incredible tool for a lot of parents who are dealing with those sorts of behaviors in home and in school, and for caretakers and the like. What I do, I think, is in terms of what I'm doing with behavior keys, is a little broader in scope, whereas a lot of what ABA does is focused on the child themselves. I find a lot more value in doing a lot more behavior or parent coaching, right? Mm. We do a lot of in-clinic work with ABA work as well. I find that the best venue is in home or at schools or wherever these kids are going to spend the majority of their time, obviously. So what I do is basically talk about, okay, what challenges are we seeing in these areas? What can we do from a strategic standpoint to counter these behaviors and change them over time? And basically just bring some hope to a lot of parents who don't really have any right now, because like I said, they're sort of at their wit's end in terms of what their kids' behaviors look like.
Well, this is sounds very abstract to me, so I'm trying to better understand. So I'm Billy and I'm at home. What are some of the behaviors that I'm doing that would have my parent contact you in the first place?
So again, pretty wide in terms of scope. A lot of what we're dealing with are physical aggression, whether that be towards peers, towards parents,
pets,
it could be pets, could be anybody, or caretakers, teachers, right? Property destruction. So, I mean, I've been in a lot of homes where things are absolutely destroyed. Elopement, which refers to just sort of running away from where they're supposed to be, right? So I've worked with parents who have kids who they have literally had to nail down windows. We'll have a five-year-old who crawls out his window in the middle of the night to go get into his neighbor's backyard and jump on their trampoline, you know? And so you can imagine what that does for a parent who feels like they're to the point where they can't even sleep because they have to monitor their child's behavior 24/7, you know? And so it can look different across the board. For some kids, it's just a matter of, you know, sharpening social skills. Some kids don't have the ability to socialize with peers. And the main concern for a lot of parents is, you know, what is this going to look like for my child going forward? Are they going to be able to maintain friendships? Are they going to be able to hold a job? You know, because a lot of those sorts of behaviors interfere with those, you know, very practical points of life. So, like I said, it's a wide scope. It's not always just, you know, Billy throws things when he gets angry. Sometimes it's Billy doesn't know how to talk to his peers, you know, or Billy doesn't know how to share, or Billy doesn't know how to interact with adults. I would say 100% of parents do in some way, shape, or form, you know. It's just the parents that I work with, it's exacerbated to the point where it doesn't allow them to be functional, you know.
Have you ever thought about doing government contracts or anything like that? Because it seems like these behaviors that you're saying in the certain context, kids could end up in the juvenile and the carceral system. And so how, like, it sounds like you have some kind of skill that could maybe help prevent them from being there, or if they're there, help them to get out and have the skills necessary to thrive as an adult once they are out.
Well, that's certainly a reality for a lot of these kids, you know, because at some point they're going to be adults, you know, and if we haven't been able to change some of these behaviors as they enter into, you know, puberty and into adulthood at some point, you know, it goes from being just a, you know, it goes from being cute to being a concern to being a problem of the state, you know? So a lot of our kids, like I said, will end up incarcerated, you know, or they'll end up in group homes, or they'll end up in state hospital, you know, and those are a lot of times just different forms of the same venue. And so have I considered something like government contracting? So, you know, I've been very fortunate to land in the position that I'm currently in, because my main focus, my current position where I work is on safety, you know? And so it's given me an opportunity over the last few years to kind of shift from thinking about things from a therapeutic standpoint to what's viable from a safety standpoint. And that's become a big time focus, you know, nationwide in terms of behavioral intervention. There's been, you know, it's not always in the news, but, you know, occasionally you'll see something about, you know, a teacher holding a door in a classroom to keep a kid from coming out and assaulting, you know, students and teachers and faculty or whatever else, you know, those things happen. And so, you know, I know how horrible it can sound when we're, you know, viewing it secondhand on the news, but, you know, the reality is a lot of times those sort of interventions, the only, the only thing that we, the teachers or faculty or whoever else can do at the time to keep everyone safe. And so, you know, being able to kind of look at things from a safety standpoint, kind of understand, okay, what's viable, what's necessary, you know, are we preparing, you know, people, are we training people to deal with these behaviors? Are we allowing them to have the proper equipment when it's necessary? All of these things are kind of my focus right now. And so along with Behavior Bites, I've actually started the ball rolling on a behavioral safety company called A+ Safety Concepts that I'll be rolling out hopefully later on this year as well, with the focus on, you know, creating a strategic plan for venues, whether it be classroom environments or clinics or treatment centers. My hope is over time that, yeah, maybe this can become the sort of thing that can become contractual in a larger scope. But, you know, right now I'm probably just looking at working with private clients in this regard, or people who see the value in, you know, creating a safer setting for these sorts of treatment or interventions. I hope that it can become something larger. I think that'd be beneficial, right? You know, I'm not opposed to regulation. And I think that this is something that, you know, from a treatment standpoint, should continue to find ways to create hard and fast standards, especially from a safety standpoint. But right now, most of these places are fulfilling a service that's greatly needed and is unfortunately still largely unregulated in a lot of ways. And so until that becomes more of a focus, probably not looking at any kind of government contractions or anything like that. But as of right now, if I can work with private clients or people who actually see value in seeing from things from that perspective, I'm happy with that.
Anthony, can I rewind for a second? How did you even get started in this? Like, how did you find this field? Is there any training or like what, like, how did you find yourself here?
Honestly, I fell into it over the course of 19 years.
Wow. So,
you know, after I left school, you know, my first job was actually in a group home working with at-risk teens. I worked in that field for a couple of years, really liked it. Felt like, yeah, I'd like to continue working with kids. Not a great way to make a living. No one's, you know, adding to their 401k working in that field, but I really enjoyed it. So I continued working in the field and I started working in a lot of different venues. You know, after that, after I worked in group homes for a couple of years, worked in a treatment center, again, with at-risk teens. That was an interesting experience. And at this point, I hadn't really started working with kids who were on the spectrum, which would later on kind of become the focus of my work. But I was working mostly with criminal teenagers, which was, again, yeah, very, very interesting experience that, but it was sort of beneficial to where I am now. Later on, I started working in spec ed classrooms for a few years as an aide, which was, it was definitely beneficial, again, to where I am now. Probably the most gratifying work I've done, you know, working with really sweet kids who, you know, just needed an environment where they could learn like everybody else could, you know. I was lucky enough to garner a couple of private clients from there because I kind of had a talent for working with kids who had behaviors, like what we've been talking about. And that kind of got me on the road to doing behavior coaching. After that, we started working in the ABA field. I've been working in the ABA field for about 9 years now. If you work in this field long enough, you start to understand like, hey, I can't do this forever. You know, I'm in my 40s now. I have no desire to
continue. Ooh, no, just kidding.
Yeah. I know you know what that feels like. So. but yeah, so I kind of made the decision. Yeah, I don't want to continue working direct care. So, you know, I tried to create this position at another place that I worked at, again, with an eye for safety and training. And this job sort of just opened up where I'm at right now. And I kind of, you know, I applied for it, got hired a few days later, you know.
Wow.
Thing. Yeah. And so now it's just kind of been a matter of deciding, okay, what does the future look like for me in this field? You know, I'd like to move beyond the scope of just working for one company and affect the industry as a whole if I'm able to.
Is this physical work? Like, I'm trying to envision, like, I'm sure you have different strategies for dealing with, because I've seen special ed teachers have different strategies for different behaviors and things. So I'm wondering, like, is what you do very physical? Like, if you're dealing with kids who are acting out?
It certainly can be. Because again, if we're talking about from a safety standpoint, you know, sometimes it becomes necessary to apply physical interventions, you know, and kids come in all sizes, shapes and sizes. So we're not always talking about, you know, skinny little fifth graders. You know, sometimes we're talking about, you know, a 300-pound 16-year-old, you know, who is physically aggressive whenever he's asked to do something, you know. And at that point, certainly becomes physical work, you know, because it becomes a matter of keeping that individual safe and keeping staff safe. My focus has been largely on prevention and de-escalation. And so, you know, the focus is always going to be on how can we prevent having to make this physical work, you know, what interventions can we put in place that allows us to de-escalate situations without having to go hands-on with an individual. You know, it's a lot like what we think of when we think about, you know, law enforcement interventions.
Just thinking about that. I was like, maybe absolutely, you can help the popo.
and even there, you know, I'm actually working with a former police officer right now who's focusing on creating a curriculum for de-escalation for police departments. And so a lot of this applies across the board.
That's, you know, awesome.
Behavioral intervention doesn't apply just to, obviously, you know, children or kids who are on the spectrum. It can certainly be physical work, but the hope is always that we can prevent it from being that kind of work, you know, whenever possible.
Yeah.
Ain't that some shit? I said, ain't that some shit? Oh, ain't that some shit? Ain't that some shit? God damn.
I think every kid could benefit from behavioral coaching. And I think that should be an integral part of teaching in the United States. Not that parents won't continue to do their jobs, but let's face it, a lot of parents are slacking, and we as a society have to deal with the impacts of that. So why not start them young, getting them on a road to success, a pathway to success with behavioral coaching? It shouldn't be until they go and beat up the teacher, which I just saw. Did you all see where the kid beat up the teacher because she took away his Nintendo Switch or something like that? This is insane. So why not across the board? Let's start from kindergarten on. Let's teach these kids, let's coach them, and let's set them up for success.
Are there psychological aspects? Like, is part of your work psychological safety?
Definitely. Absolutely. You know, having an understanding of why behaviors happen, you know, is the key component, you know, to use some ABA terminology. We're always thinking about what the antecedent is. Antecedent referring to, you know, what leads up to the behavior and how it occurs. And so, you know, understanding why people do what they do, is probably always going to be the biggest part of, you know, behavioral intervention. How can we motivate them or incentivize an individual to change their behavior, right? Because a lot of times people are doing what they do, you know, if we're talking about kids, they're behaving the way they behave because it works for them in some way, shape, or form. You know, kids throw tantrums because it gets them what they want. Kid hits somebody because it gets people to back off and stop placing demands, you know? Mm-hmm. We're thinking from a more practical standpoint, you know, you show up to work because you get a paycheck, you know? So we're always thinking about, okay, what can we do that will allow us to motivate an individual or reinforce their behavior going forward and allow us to, in the long term, change their behavior. And so, yeah, there's a lot of psychological considerations for this work. It obviously doesn't just, you know, take on the physical aspect. Again, that's the last case or the last thing we want to delve into if we're able to. So we're always thinking about how can we get into the mind of this individual? How can we figure out what motivates them to do what we're asking them to do or to, you know, behave in a way that allows them to function in a setting that might not always be appealing to them, you know? It shouldn't be surprising to us when a kid continues to act out if he's getting pulled out of school every time he does it, you know, because he doesn't want to be at school. So of course he's going to continue to act out. When we understand that, that allows us to kind of get ahead of the game and have a better understanding of what the intervention should look like, because it's never going to look the same for two individuals.
Have you ever had to deal with someone who was maybe, what is it, sociopathic or something, where you could not get to them?
I wouldn't apply a diagnosis, as I am not a psychologist or a doctor.
We're going to put that disclaimer in the front of the episode.
Absolutely not trying to get canceled today. Have I come across individuals who have had an incredibly hard time changing their behavior? Absolutely. Have we had some failures? Yes, absolutely. Any endeavor you take on, you're likely to have failures. And that's been true for me in this regard as well. So yeah, and what's unfortunate though, is you don't always get to see your success or your failures over the long term, because you know, I'll work with a parent or family for a period of time, and I'm not likely to see what the end result is going to be for them. Yeah. You know, sometimes I'll get to hear things about progress, you know, and sometimes I get to hear progress reports, and sometimes, you know, I'm able to maintain relationships a couple of years after working with a family and get to see that, you know, this kid has gotten to go off to go to college. Aww. You know, or they're finishing school. One kiddo that I worked with is going through an electrician's apprenticeship right now, and I mean, this kid, aww, like, when you want to talk about behaviors, was checking every box you could think of, and now is, you know, the shining example of, you know, what you want your students to look like at a school, you know. And so being able to see those kind of successes is awesome, you know. But in the same regards, to sort of answer your question, yeah, sometimes we do come across individuals who are so embedded in that behavior, you know, for whatever reason that there might be, you know, usually it has to do with some sort of diagnosis. While I wouldn't label it sociopathy necessarily, you know, diagnoses like ODD, which is oppositional defiance disorder, which is a lot of times applied to juveniles, that might be a factor, and that could definitely be a hindrance for someone in terms of changing their behavior over time.
And what do you do to make that not get to you? Like, how are you taking care of yourself? Like, when you're dealing with this every day, I know you said that direct care is something you're moving away from. Does that help? Like, what are some things that you do to make sure that you're not taking on too much of this, taking too much of this home with you?
I think you have to have a heart for it. You know, I've sort of come to the place where it's hard for me. It's difficult for me to picture myself working in any other field. Mm-hmm. I can tell you it's hard to stick with it sometimes, right? But I think what also is key is that you have to find ways to evolve in the field, you know? So I knew for myself, working in direct care wasn't going to be a long-term thing for me, even if I wanted to work in the field. So it came down to deciding a few years ago, either I'm going to find another way to work in this field, or I'm not going to continue working in this field, you know? So knowing your limitations, you know, and then while you're working in this field, having an understanding that you know, while it's difficult and taxing and requires a lot of you, you're doing some good for the world, you know, and deciding that your main priority isn't going to be getting rich, you know, or, you know, it's like anything else. When it's a labor of love, or, you know, when you decide that this is, you know, my calling or my purpose in life, that's usually what's going to be what drives you despite, you know, any difficulties that you might come across. And it is difficult. You know, this is a high burnout field. You know, at the lowest levels, there's massive turnover, and it's very difficult to keep good, you know, behavior technicians or therapists in place just because it is so stressful at times.
Yeah.
You know, it requires so much of people. But again, I think it really does come down to knowing your limitations. And it also comes down to, you know, people who are at the top level in this field, whether they be owners of, clinics, or, you know, people who are in a supervisory position, realizing how taxing this can be. And, you know, as a whole and as an industry, making it easier for, you know, for us to be able to keep good people in place who have a talent for this, working in this field, and also have like a passion for it, you know. So this isn't for everybody, you know. And I think that at some point, you work in this field long enough, you begin to question whether or not it's for you, you know. And I ask myself that on the daily a lot of times, you know. But I've made certain concessions for myself that have allowed me to continue working this field even after all these years.
What do you mean?
Now we're like, what
I mean in terms
about.
Of what concessions?
Yes.
I put a certain standard in place for myself, right? Mm-hmm. So like I decided, okay, this is what I'm willing to work for in terms of my pay. This is what I'm, you know, this is how I'm willing to work. Like I said before, I knew that I wasn't going to be working in direct care forever, you know? So I don't work in direct care anymore. You know, that will continue to be the thing for me. And the main thing was that I knew I had to find a different way to work in this field, you know? Mm-hmm. So as long as I'm working as a trainer and as a coach and, you know, doing work with parents, I think that I'll always be happy working in this field, you know? And getting to see my success firsthand is big for me as well. So as long as I'm able to do those things, I have more control over my professional life now than I have at any point in the last 20 years. And so that's the biggest thing for me.
That's huge. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cause we always talk about that. We're like, man, we want to work for ourselves or have some, you know, mm-hmm. nobody wants to work for somebody else who doesn't care about you as an employee,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. And a lot of times that's definitely the case, you know, building yourself up to the point where you can work for yourself and you can work within the scope of your talents, you know, and
that's this podcast. This is how we try to do it. It's going to make some money now.
As it should be, right? Monetize your gifts every single time, right?
So, I don't know if this is a gift.
Speaking of, you mentioned that you're starting a podcast as well.
Yeah.
Still thinking about that?
I am still thinking about it. And you know, content creation is definitely not...
for everybody.
it's not for everybody. It's not my talent, you know. But it's the world we live in now, you know. It's the fastest and most effective way to convey a message, you know. And to do it to the biggest audience possible, right? It's just a matter of making sure that what you have to say is something that people want to hear, right? Mm-hmm. I know for certain that what we talk about amongst myself and my peers, you know, in this field and in this industry is definitely something that's not just of interest, but of, you know, vital concern for a lot of people. Cause again, there are so many parents who are dealing with these things on a daily basis.
I think that would be huge. I mean, I have three littles. Yeah. And I think even if my kid's behavior isn't to the level in which I would have extreme concern, I'm sure that I would learn something from different techniques or different insights you have on behavior in general as a parent. So I think that would be something beneficial to all parents to be able to listen to Because you said 20 years of experience. I've been a mom for 9 years. You know what I mean? Like, you know, right, what these kids are going through, what these parents and families are going through. So I think that any type of wisdom you could impart would be beneficial. And, you know, podcasting would be a great way to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you said that too, because, you know, I think that a lot of times we don't think of it in practical terms. And, you know, when we talk about what I, you know, the things that I coach on and things I refer to, it's not always for the extreme behaviors. It's not, okay, yeah, my kid is trying to set the school on fire. That's the only time it's alive. No, absolutely not. You know, getting your kids to get up and do their chores or their homework, or, you know, working on general compliance, those sorts of things.
Yes.
How can we do those things in the most effective manner? You know, having like a real understanding of, you know, actually having this discussion earlier, like, you know, generationally, how has discipline changed?
Ooh.
You know, in the most effective manner. How have we gone from, you know, corporal punishment being the most effective manner of discipline or getting, you know, that sort of instructional compliance or control at home, to, you know, free love, to you know, self-actualization, right? All these things that we're dealing with now, you know, this full revolution.
Gentle
parenting. You know, mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. You know, so and then, you know, having
that's a whole nother topic we need to have you come back and talk about.
Yeah, because we were just talking about that. Yeah, that's funny.
Happily, definitely. And all of those things apply, right? And so even from a practical day-to-day standpoint, even if we're not dealing with, you know, extreme behaviors or things that are just like you have us concerned about the future of our children necessarily, you know, how can we most effectively parent? You know, and I do want to place a caveat on that, you know, I don't have kids, right? I've worked with kids for the last 20 years. And a lot of times that's the question that comes up, like, oh, you don't have kids, you don't know what you're talking about. And I will say, from a parenting standpoint,
right?
I know. But I guess in all honesty and in fairness, it's a relevant statement to make, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that I'd want to be coached by someone who didn't play the sport they're coaching me in necessarily, right? But some of the best coaches we've ever had were people who were able to look at things from an outside perspective, yep, objectively, you know, and not to say dispassionately necessarily, but without emotion, a lot of times, mm-hmm, that's applied when we're having to discipline our children and talk about things from, again, the most practical standpoint, like, this is what's effective. You know, you're not hurting your child by saying no to your kid, right? No, your child doesn't need 8 hours of screen time. You know, you're not hurting your kid if you don't allow those things, you know? Mm-hmm. And so being able to have those discussions from a very practical standpoint, yeah, I think that can be extremely beneficial.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, as someone who comes from that perspective, I think a lot of times that's what's most valuable. It's like, yeah, I'm not a parent, you know, I'm disciplinarian, you know, someone who has been able to see firsthand what's effective in terms of changing behavior. Yeah.
And when you say content, what does that mean? Like, when you say using content for behavioral coaching?
So right now I'm thinking mostly in terms of YouTube videos.
Like creating them, or?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
So the concept was, again, it's something called Behavior Bites. And the idea is just to create like very small, digestible bits of, mm-hmm, content.
Bites.
That, okay,
now
I get
it.
Yeah.
There you go. Now it's like,
see, it applies. That people can, you know, watch and absorb and apply, you know. And so we're going to start on a small scope, talking about, you know, what is behavior, why does behaviors happen, you know, all of these things. No, my kid is not just bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times these things are just, you know, forms of functional or non-functional communication. How do I communicate with my kid on their level? How do I get them to communicate on a more functional level? All of those things, right? Having a better understanding of why things on a very broad scope are occurring when we see these behaviors. And then over time, you know, getting a little more specific. Again, my ultimate goal is to create curriculum that we can kind of apply on a, like a seminar basis,
mm-hmm,
where people can come in, go through the curriculum, talk about their experiences at home and we can have like some very specific discussion about how we can apply those concepts in the curriculum to their own actual experience, right? And so that's the long-term goal. But right now, in terms of content, yeah, we're talking YouTube videos, podcasts, I hope eventually, you know, but this is all kind of a learning experience for me. I'm not the most technologically savvy individual. And so a lot of this has been kind of a learning process for me. But getting to see you guys do stuff like this, you know, with your podcasts and your video interactions and your live streams and everything's been real cool. And gives me hope that, you know, if y'all can do it, maybe.
Yeah, you definitely can. If we
can. You definitely can. I can't wait. I'll definitely be watching.
Yeah, because I know you guys are old heads like me. So,
yeah. Awesome.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. This was great.
Good to see you. We'll have you on again.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
I look forward to it.
All right. Take care.
Take it easy, y'all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Two Girls Shooting the Shit with Em and Mo. Please enjoy this mindful moment. The secret of change is to focus all of your energy, not on fighting the old, but on building the new.